Okay, next verse. Like a plantain tree, life force has no inner core. Like a bubble, life has no inner core. Like a mist, it dissipates as one bends down to look. Like a mirage, it is attractive from a distance. Like a reflection in a mirror, it appears tangible and real. Like clouds and fog, it appears stable and enduring. This enemy, the self, too, is the same. Though ostensibly it appears to exist, it never does. Though seemingly real, nowhere is it really. Though perceived, it transcends reification and denigration. Okay, so a plantain tree is a tree in India, like bamboo, there's nothing inside. Okay, so like that, life force, you know, the life force of our life, has no inner core. Okay, it breaks, like a, you know, things without a core break easily, if, you know, our life also breaks. Like a bubble, life has no inner core. You know, bubble, looks like there's something inside there, there's nothing there, pops very easily. Likewise, our life, boom. Okay, like a mist, it dissipates as one bends down to look. So like the mist this morning, when you're in the middle of it, it doesn't look like a mist. It's just how things are. Only when you're outside, you can look at it and see it, okay? Like a mirage, it is attractive from a distance. So when you're thirsty and you see a pool of water at a distance, it looks good. When you try and dive into the asphalt, you're going to hurt your head. Because, you know, there was just an appearance of water on that asphalt. It's a mirage. Okay, looks like water, isn't water. Like a reflection in a mirror, it appears tangible and real. Huh? Looks like a real person, not a real person. Like clouds and fog, it appears stable and enduring. So, you know, when you have clouds, I guess this is maybe a Tibetan or an Indian analogy, you know. They look like they're just hanging there in the sky, not moving. But actually, clouds and fog in Seattle, that looks pretty stable and permanent, doesn't it? Okay, well, actually, we don't need to go to Tibet, you know. Like clouds and fog, it appears stable and enduring. Yeah? You know, the weather's the same the whole year round in Seattle. You know, the clouds don't change. Okay, so, but in actual fact, the clouds do change, don't they? Okay, so, similarly, this enemy, the self, yeah, our ignorance also exists like an illusion. Self-centered thought also exists like an illusion. So don't think that these wrong consciousnesses have some inherent nature of their own and exist independently of everything else. They don't, you know. Ignorance exists by being merely labeled. Negative karma exists by being merely labeled. Hell realms exist by being merely labeled. None of these things are findable when analyzed. Okay? So in the same way that a mirror image appears real, or like the face in the mirror appears real, but it's not. Our ignorance, our self-centeredness, the hell realms, the human realm, all these things appear real, like they exist from their own side, independent of everything else, but they don't. They exist dependent on causes and conditions, dependent on parts, dependent on the mind that labels and conceives of them. So I think this is important to reflect on, you know, so that we don't make self-centeredness more real than everything else, and so that we don't make ignorance more real and more heavier than everything else, so that we don't make our problems more real than anything else. Okay? But to realize all these things exist by merely appearing. Okay? By merely being labeled. Okay? So ostensibly it appears to exist, it never does. So even though ignorance looks like it's there solid, ignorance is a mere label that's put on a series of mind moments that have similar qualities. That's all ignorance is something that exists by being merely labeled on the basis of some mind moments that have similar qualities. That's all your anger is. You don't have deep, you know, inherently existent rage existing inside of you. You know, like some people think nowadays, you know, there's rage inside of me and it's getting suppressed and it's going to go at any moment. You know, rage exists by being merely labeled. There's no truly existent rage there. It exists by being merely labeled. There's a bunch of mind moments that have some similar qualities. Independence upon that, we label rage. That's all rage. So we don't need to be afraid of our rage. Okay. On the other hand, we can't say it's non-existent. Yeah. So we work with it, and it can change. Why? Because it exists as a mere label. If our rage and our anger had some hard and fast independent existence, then no matter how much we tried, it couldn't be changed. Because it would exist from its own side. But it doesn't exist from its own side. You know, it's completely dependent on other things. It's like, you know, when you have three sticks put together, they only stand up because all three of them are there. Okay? So our anger only stands up because there's different causes and conditions, you know, there. And in dependence upon it, we label anger. Yeah, but none of the causes and conditions are the anger. So I think it's important to reflect like this. It gives us a whole different take on our emotions. And instead of feeling like they're so concrete, you know, like they dominate us and we have no choice, we begin to see that, you know, they arise out of causes and conditions. They don't have any essence. You know, they're like this plantain tree. They're like a bubble. Yeah. I mean, emotions are like a bubble, aren't they? You know, our attachment especially. Our attachment, big bubble. Then, bang. You know. Ah, that person I fell in love with doesn't exist. It's true. We fell in love with an image we projected on that basis. Okay. So then, we get into the it also says, though seemingly real, nowhere is it really. Though perceived, it transcends reification and denigration. So although we perceive things, and because they're perceived, they exist, they don't exist in the way they appear. Okay, so they transcend reification and denigration. Reification is the extreme of absolutism. That means holding things as inherently existent or truly existent. Denigration is the extreme of nihilism, saying that there's nothing there at all, that things are totally non-existent. So when we talk about the middle way path, we're saying that things are not reified, they're not concrete and absolute, and they're also not totally non-existent. Okay? The middle way is they exist, but they don't inherently exist. They're empty, but they're not totally non-existent. Okay, so emptiness doesn't mean total non-existence. It's empty of a particular wrong kind of existence. And the wrong kind of existence that things are empty of never existed. So when we realize emptiness, it's not like we're destroying phenomena. It's not like things used to be inherently existent, and then when I search and analyze and don't find them, I'm making them empty. No, they never were empty. They never were there to start with in that way. Okay? So it's like, you know, when you were a kid, you thought there was another baby in the mirror. When you're grown up and you realize that there's no baby in the mirror, did you make the baby in the mirror non-existent? No, because there was never a baby in the mirror to make non-existent. Okay? So when we realize emptiness, we're not destroying phenomena or changing the way phenomena exist. All we're doing is changing the way we apprehend them, the way we perceive them. So that's why Lama said emptiness is here all the time. We're just not seeing it. So realizing emptiness is not creating emptiness afresh. You know, things used to be truly existent. Now I realize emptiness, so I made them empty. There never was another baby in the mirror. We're just grown up now and realize there was not a baby in the mirror. Okay? So things are free of being reified, being concrete. They're free of total non-existence or being denigrated. Yeah? So that's middle way view. They talk about being middle way. Okay, so then the question arises in verse 107. So how can there be a wheel of karma? Okay, how can karma exist if everything's empty? Although devoid of intrinsic reality, a reflection of the moon can appear in a cup of water. Karma and its effects too manifest in diverse false guises. So within this mere appearance, I'll follow the norms of ethics. Okay? So, if we are focusing a lot on analyzing and searching and probing, and again, analyzing doesn't mean doing intellectual gymnastics. It means really having a probing awareness and a deep investigative mind that's looking deeply at where's the essence, where's the existence of this thing. Okay, when we do a lot of that, it's very easy to, because our mind so easily confuses existence with inherent existence and emptiness with non-existence. It's so easy that when we're doing a lot of emptiness meditation, we see that there's no inherently existent thing there or no inherently existent me. Because we've confused inherent existence with regular conventional existence, we then go, oh, there's nothing there at all. At which point we've gone to the other extreme over here of total non-existence. And then when we meditate on dependent arising and see, oh yeah, if you put all these things together, there's an appearance. Since, we're confused again, then we flip to this extreme and say, oh, they must inherently exist. Okay, so this is very common when you're doing the emptiness meditation to seesaw back and forth because we haven't yet been able to differentiate conventional existence from inherent existence and emptiness from total non-existence. Okay, so it's only when we can discriminate these differences that we have an accurate view of emptiness. Yeah. So you can see by this question, how can karma exist? That question arises because you're doing emptiness meditation, like, for example, on the 12 links or on karma or, all these things, like looking for a real samsara. And you see, oh, there's no real samsara. Oh, there must be nothing there. Okay? Or you look, you investigate your non-virtuous actions, and you see, oh, there's no solid, concrete, non-virtuous action there. There must be nothing there. Or you look at your positive karma, and you see, you analyze, try and find some inherently existent positive karma. Can't find that. So the mind flips to the other extreme of, oh, then there's no such thing as positive karma. It doesn't exist at all. Okay, so you see flipping from inherent existence to total non-existence. Yeah, so that view doesn't have an accurate understanding of either conventional truth or ultimate truth. Okay, because that mind's, totally flips from one extreme to the other, totally back and forth. Okay, so to have an accurate understanding of both conventional and ultimate truth, we have to understand dependent arising and emptiness and how these things complement each other, how they're coming to the same point, how they're not contradictory. So how karma can be empty and yet karma still exists conventionally. It doesn't inherently exist, but it exists. It's empty, but it's not totally non-existent. Okay? So there's still appearances in that TV set. There's still appearances in the mirror. Okay? But those things don't exist the way they appear. Okay? So, given that karma, nirvana, samsara, negative karma, positive karma, these things exist, but they're not inherently existent. Yeah. So because they exist, it's good to observe ethical discipline, isn't it? Because causes bring results. So like I was saying before, realizing the emptiness of something doesn't mean it's non-existent. Okay? So while inherently existent negative karma is totally non-existent, negative karma itself exists. While inherently existent positive karma is totally non-existent, because nothing inherently exists, positive karma conventionally exists. Okay? So, when people don't understand this, then they think, oh, when you realize emptiness, you don't have to pay any attention to karma anymore. Okay? And so people have that wrong understanding, and that's where you get all these people saying, there's no good, there's no bad, just do whatever you want, be spontaneous and natural, because everything's empty. Okay? You hear this a lot. Oh, so-and-so's realized emptiness. They're beyond karma. They can do whatever they want. They're beyond karma. Yeah. Actually, people who've realized emptiness are more meticulous about karma because they understand that although things are empty, they function. And so positive actions bring happy results and negative actions bring unhappy results. Okay. Now you do get the question, where do these highly realized beings, these great yogis, these mahasiddhis that we read about in the past, how can they do such weird things? I mean, Talopa, who's one of the great lineage lamas of the Kagyu tradition, he killed fish. Okay, he killed fish, that's negative karma. Well, he could also bring them back to life. Okay, so, he has some special kind of ability there. Yeah, it wasn't like us who kill fish because, we feel like having a tasty fish dinner and say, oh, it's all empty, so I can kill fish and have a good fish dinner. No, Talopa could also bring him back to life. Or we were talking with His Holiness one time about this whole thing of, all these awakened beings, realized beings, doing all these things. And His Holiness was saying, if somebody's at that level of the path where they've realized emptiness, directly, and they see things as appearance, then for them, eating chocolate cake and eating poo is the same thing. Because they realize that they are both equally empty. Okay. So then Bob Thurman said, well, then we give them the taste just to see if they're real yogis. you serve them some poop and you serve them some some chocolate cake, and if in their mind everything is the same because they've realized the emptiness of both of them, Okay, so you can see from that perspective, somebody who has great realization may act very unconventionally. And they may do things that appear to be negative karma from the perspective of an ordinary being, but because these beings' realization is so great, they're not even seeing the objects the same way we do. Okay? So when they've realized emptiness with direct perception, their respect for karma increases more and more, because they really understand that dependent arising and emptiness are totally supportive and not contradictory. Okay? People who you know, have an intellectual idea of emptiness or are very confused, then say, oh, it's all empty, so it doesn't matter. You know, and that's a nihilistic view. That's very nihilistic. As His Holiness said, well, it's funny how all these people say, you know, samsara, nirvana, it's all the same, it's all empty. How they all choose to have a very nice lifestyle. None of them ever go and, you know, live on the streets and live in the ghetto and, you know, saying samsara and nirvana are all the same. You know? How can they always choose a very luxurious lifestyle? Okay? So here you can see why people who actually have realizations, you know, I mean, the people who are bodhisattvas who appear in the world, they're not going to proclaim it. They're not going to go live in the ghetto and say, hi, I'm a bodhisattva. Yeah, they just do it. Actually, there was one lama, Kyungla Rata Rinpoche, incredible lama, very, very humble. I have a lot of respect for him. He teaches in New York. And when he first came to America, nobody, you know, nobody had a clue who he was. This was in the 60s. He went to work at, I think, Macy's or one of these department stores. He worked there for 25 years. Nobody had a clue that this was a great lama. You know, finally some people discovered him and began to request teachings. But he, you know, I heard he used to sometimes go and sit on the streets of New York because he wanted to see what it was like. You know, to really be a street person and understand what their lives were like. Yeah, I mean, incredible. But how many people choose to do that? Oh, samsara and nirvana are the same? I'm going to live in Beverly Hills because, you know, it's all the same. Yeah.
25 years to figure out Macy's?
Now, it took other people 25 years to realize that there was somebody special at Macy's. Okay, so how can there be a wheel of karma? Though devoid of intrinsic reality, they give an analogy here, a reflection of a moon can exist in a cup of water. Okay? So like, you know, when you walk up the road to the pond, you know, on a clear night, you could see the moon reflected in the pond water. Is there a moon in the pond? No. Okay? Similarly, karma functions. It appears, yeah, but there's nothing really there. So it says karma and its effects, too, manifest in diverse false guises. So within this mere appearance, I'll follow the norms of ethics.